Hello everybody, welcome to the newest episode of the Cyberpod EU.
This is Cyberpod EU, the European cybersecurity podcast powered by Sockwise.
I'm Greg Leshku, your host. Today, I have the honor to talk to Gábor Szabó, Principal Cyber Defense Advisor and Cyber Startup Founder. You rarely meet people with such a disciplined personality decades of practical experience in the field of cyber defense. However, I've worked with Gábor together with customers as NATO, for instance. We have rarely time to stop for a moment and look at current initiatives of cybersecurity from another angle. Now we have this opportunity. The special occasion that I invited Gábor is an event held with NATO in Brussels, which had a focus on new aspects of security operations these days. Hello, Gábor. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Hello, everyone. I'm glad to be here, and thanks for this very nice introduction.
I'm really glad to have you here, and it's a bit strange to say so that both of us are Hungarians, but we speak in English. I hope the audience will appreciate this kind of effort what we make in here, and we will do our best, I guess. Well, I wanted to ask, I know you since a while, and from many aspects you are present in our projects as an expert, but how would you define yourselves? What is your expertise area or RAE to be Latin?
Well, I started my cybersecurity career almost 20 years ago. I started in cyber defense, especially in cybersecurity incident management at a global financial institute. So I started to focus on, in the beginning of my career, on incident response. I did this for a while. I found it very stressful. So I thought it would be great to learn other opportunities and other aspects of cybersecurity. So I gained expertise experience in general cybersecurity management. I worked as a business information security officer. I deep dived into cybersecurity engineering because I have an engineering degree at the end of the day. I was leading cybersecurity engineering teams. But after a while, to be honest, I found that the most interesting part is still the cybersecurity incident management. So almost 8 years ago, I turned back towards security operations centers. I started to focus on fusion security operations centers, and that's what I'm doing nowadays to help grow and continuously develop existing cybersecurity centers or design new ones. So I would say in a nutshell that I'm pretty much cybersecurity incident management focused.
Thank you very much. Yes, it explains a lot of your tiny bits of knowledge coming up during the conversations. Today's topic is around NATO. So I think before we are jumping into the security operations aspects of NATO, I should make some kind of an explanation what NATO is in terms of cybersecurity, why we are working with them, and what we are doing actually with them. So NATO is, as most of you or all of you know, it is an alliance, but also a huge organization, which means that there is actually thousands of people who are responsible for making it possible that several nations interact with each other on many different layers. So in terms of communications with different IT systems, and of course, in military operations. And on top of that, they have their own network. And it's also a complex, very, very interesting network topology, what they have. They have to protect their own network as well to ensure the communication that it all be safe and secure. But also, it should act as a center of excellence for all the NATO nations within the cyberspace. So it's a huge challenge for NATO to be on the top and be a peak knowledge base for all these nations and for different organizations around the globe. And for us, it was a huge honor a couple of years ago when our company EuroOne was able to manage it to get to be a direct partner for NATO. And NATO uses of course, plenty different cybersecurity technologies, among which there is one, the NetWitness technology, of which we are and still are one of the top experts in the world and especially in Europe. And they needed our expertise, and we acted there in the field of professional services area. And since then, we've been into several different projects within NATO, mainly in connection with the security operations activities, or more closely to the network security or network defense and response capabilities. So that's the background of NATO. And we had an event last year, as I mentioned already. It was in November in NATO headquarters. And yeah, I think we could imagine that NATO is a well-organized society, a well-organized organization. But the building and the feelings I had there was very impressive. I think I will never forget it. I think even the gate which we had to go through were a bit special. However, we all enter into different buildings where the security is top priority. But I think I've never been to such a high level of security area where which NATO is and was last year. What are your feelings with this visit?
Well, you use the word impressive. That was my feeling when I was standing in front of the building of the NATO HQ, simply due to the size of the building. I think everything is as you would expect from an organization like this. Everything is huge, very formal, very structured. So like you would expect from a military organization. But it was a very, very exciting experience.
Yes, I think it was a very important milestone for both of us. And luckily, we got very positive feedbacks from the audience as well. So how it went was, it was a technical event in the meaning that we introduced a couple of technologies and our competencies, actually. And when I talked about the reference stories of ours, the audience, which was made of experts from different member nations of NATO, so people from France, from the US, from Turkey, Germany, etc. So they showed real interest, because we were also pretty honest and we shared all the difficulties, all the complexities of the projects we lived. These were, of course, mainly building up security operations centers and helping organizations to build their capabilities in this field. But then I passed over the word to Gábor to talk about the current challenges of SOC organizations. And I had the feeling that it was even more interesting for the audience. We had several questions. That's why I thought that it might be interesting for our audience to share the knowledge we discussed there. So could you wrap up shortly what was this, talking about Fusion SOCs or any other expertise area you discussed that event, Gábor?
Sure, but maybe let me step back.
Thanks.
One, because even deciding on what should be the topic was not an easy task. When we heard that we will get the opportunity to present in front of the committee, we started a quite huge and long internal brainstorming session. What topic should we bring to them? Because considering its scientific organization, honestly, you would not expect to be able to tell something new to them. That's why we wanted to focus on a topic that's relevant to any organizations nowadays, breaking up the silos between the technologies, environment, people, teams, for the sake of proactive threat management. And this kind of concept to break up the silos, to increase joint communication, joint efforts to reach a common goal, I think that's what the basic of the NATO mission is. So that's why we ended up to talk about the topic of Fusion Security Operations Centers or Fusion SOCs.
Yeah, it is true. That's what I was just adding. Yes, it's a very good word. Because collaboration and cooperation between very different parts of the organization or even different organizations.
Maybe it's worth mentioning what we mean by fusion security operations centers, because I don't think there is a quite exact definition for that. I think in general, it means a unified approach to threat management. There are two major approaches what we might mean under fusion security operations centers. There are organizations who start bringing teams together who are focusing on certain type of incident management to work together, like cybersecurity incident management teams, physical security incident management teams, fraud management teams, service incident management teams. And for them, fusion security operations centers mean that these distinct teams are sitting together, collaborating together to be much better at the end of the day in managing any kind of incidents. And there's another approach where we engage non-incident focused teams into the collaboration and cooperation, like taking the General Security Operations Center and engaging teams from OT, operational technology engineering teams, DevOps engineering teams, cloud engineering teams. And during the talk and presentation, we were focusing on this second option, I would say, when you bring together non-incident focused teams for the sake of better cybersecurity incident management.
I'm afraid we will need to discuss these terms as well. What do we mean by OT, DevOps, and the others? Let's do that maybe. Maybe through stories. Do you have some stories on that?
Yeah, Mayuri, let me just bring an example why it's important to be able to handle cybersecurity incidents which are impacting not just the traditional IT environment. Let's start with the OT or operational technology. Under OT, you might mean manufacturing systems, production systems. So usually systems which are not traditional IT-like, but which are focusing on to control a real-world process instead of focusing data, which is the major scope of IT. I think most of the listeners already heard about the Colonial Pipeline ransomware attack, which happened back in 2021 in the US. It impacted the fuel supplies over the overall southeast coast of the US. A dedicated group implanted ransomware on the Colonial Pipeline systems. It shut it down, the whole operation. And even though the company paid the ransom in a relatively short period of time, if I'm not mistaken, it was just a few hours when they paid the ransom. And even though they got the tool to decrypt the impacted devices, the whole decryption process and the whole restoration process was so slow that the whole fuel pipeline was impacted for more than a week. The whole incident started from a leaked credential. The main issue was the inability of billing the fuel to the customers. So at the end of the day, OT systems, non-IT systems were not impacted. But due to the fear what can happen and whether there are any infected devices on the OT part of their internal systems, the company decided to halt the whole pipeline operations as a precaution. And I think it was very interesting to see the chain of events or the effects that you would not normally expect from a cyber attack. For example, as there was quite quickly a shortage on fuel supplies, certain airlines had to modify the path of long distance flights, adding additional stops to fuel the airplane. Another interesting or unfortunate impact was a panic buying, which started after a few days, actually on the, if I'm not mistaken, on the fourth day of the pipeline shutdown. And due to this panic buying of the fuel, the average fuel prices rose to their highest level since 2014. And that was also an interesting The company paid 75 bitcoins, at that time roughly 4.4 million USD, to the ransomware group. In May. By June, the authorities could recover more than 60 bitcoins, basically a significant amount. But due to the Bitcoin crash, which happened in the meantime, the worst value of the recovered Bitcoins was only 2.3 million USD. So even though they could recover most of the ransom, the company itself suffered significant impact just because there was a crash in the Bitcoin price as well. So normally I don't think we would think that having a cyber attack can have so serious impact on very different areas of our life.
That's very interesting. And this is just OT, and we have several areas. Could we just summarize shortly what type of new challenges we have in front of the SOC organizations? Then we can drill down into the specific ones. We started with OT, but you mentioned earlier DevOps environments, I guess. What else we have new thing on the table?
Yeah, sure. So the biggest challenge with OT is that, just to turn back to OT for a sentence,
yep,
is that there's a shift of focal point from data to real-world process. In IT environments, we are focusing on confidentiality, integrity. In these OT environments or cyber physical environments, we rather prioritize safety and the continuous operation, which couldn't be fulfilled in the case of the Colonial Pipeline, for example. And due to this shift in the focal point, there are technology differences, which is impacting the whole incident management process. Now, when we focus on cloud environment, for example, it brings new challenges in terms of telemetry and detection needs that a SOC should cope with. The cloud itself alters traditional practices that we usually do within IT. For example, in cloud systems, identity management is a bit of different. Key management is different. There are other concepts for storage, for data management. New, quite unique technologies rise within the cloud environment, like containerization, gaining visibility into these containers. In Kubernetes orchestration, is quite difficult or might be quite difficult. So there are certain challenges just due to this altered traditional practices in the cloud environment that the Security Operations Center need to deal with. After talking about the challenges of OT for a Security Operations Center and mentioning the cloud environment, I would bring up additional three topics. For example, IIoT, the Industrial Internet of Things. This is basically the area where you are combining the difficulties of OT with the challenges of the cloud environments, finding, for example, properly skilled cybersecurity professionals who understand what is happening in an IIoT architecture and who can assist in incident management, investigation, response, and so on is quite challenging. Mm-hmm. Also, it's worth mentioning the era of DevOps. Nowadays, the agile development and operations of new applications requires a new unique method and environment, which is the DevOps environment. This agility enablement in development comes with rapid changes and with highly integrated tools. And when it comes to security operations centers, you need to find a way how to gain visibility into this DevOps environment, where to put the controls in the DevOps pipeline, and so on and so on. So that's quite a challenging topic from Security Operations Center point of view. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to mention the topic of AI as well, because on one hand, we can see AI as an opportunity for Security Operations Centers. But on the other hand, we need to raise the question whether we need to start building Security Operations Centers for AI as well, whether we need to start protecting our AI environments or how to deal with the challenges or threats threatening the AI environment.
Clear. So I think you have listed several. I'll just try to summarize what we've heard so far. So first of all, we talked about the OT area of our networks to be protected or supported, monitored by the operations centers. Then we discussed a little bit about cloud. Another thing was IIoT. The coming up the topic was the DevOps environment, which has its own specialties. in terms of new technology and process aspects. And also we have the AI as an opportunity and a threat as well. But from both aspects, the SOCs have to deal with it. It's a hell of a list, I would say. Do we have a common approach to address all these? Or how do you slice it up to be able to eat it?
The logic that we followed during the presentation in front of the NATO committee was that, first of all, we talked about the similarities that are independent of the environment where we need to do cybersecurity incident management. We can say that we have a similar threat concept. So basically, we have a threat actor with intent, capability, or opportunity who poses a threat to the given environment. The attack chain is quite similar regardless of the environment where we need to provide cybersecurity incident handling. Just refer to the MITRE attack matrix. You can see quite similar techniques and tactics regardless of the environment. The security countermeasures that we use are quite similar because we need to apply these security countermeasures on people, process, and technology layers. The concepts that we use in cyber defense are very similar regardless of the environment. Let me just mention the defense in depth concept or zero trust. And basically, the overall mission of cybersecurity incident management is the same: to provide early detection and rapid response for the cybersecurity incidents. So, starting from these similarities, if you think through what are the major building blocks of a security operations center on the technology, process, and people layers, considering the challenges of the given environment, let it be an OT, let it be cloud environment or a DevOps environment, you can easily find what building blocks should be adjusted considering the challenges to reach the common goal, the cybersecurity incident response mission. So that was the logic, and I think that's the concept how we need to build Fusion Security Operations Centers. Start from the general blueprint that we have from IT, go through the environment where you need to apply this blueprint, consider the challenges, consider the differences in terms of processes, technology, and the skills of the people, and adjust the standard building blocks considering these challenges. That was basically the skeleton and the major focus of the talk that we had with NATO.
Mm-hmm. And based on your experience or observations on the market or including public organizations, do you have any kind of trends to be seen? I mean, Which area is developing better, which is accepted better, and the other side, I mean, the customer side, or like it's the same. I mean, they are still or they are struggling with all these on the same level. But where do we have better positions? Because we feel that traditional data centers, at least we know how to approach it. Not just we as a provider, but also all the IT organizations have IT administrators who take care about the Active Directory, the mail server, the web server, etc. But when it's about OT, we all know that works totally different. Or when we are talking about the microservices infrastructures, as you mentioned the term silo, yes, it's like that. There is a team or a department which is responsible for the new digitalization technologies. They take care of these new things, which is mainly cloud-based SaaS infrastructures and so on. And then the information remains in this very, very little circle. And then we got the AI, which is on top of everything, maybe breaks all the rules we may had before. Where do we have the best chances, at least? I would start at potentially the easiest part. That's why I'm asking.
Well, when it comes to the topic of OT, whether we need to do something to make cyber physical systems more secure, I think at least it's not a question anymore that we need to do something there. We can see really frightening white papers or stories around the globe why this is important, how this is impacting people's life. For example, recently I just saw a show on CNA, which is an English language Asian news network. It was a documentary show. There was a ransomware attack against a hospital in Japan back in 2021. And it was really interesting to see on this documentary show from the nurse's perspective, from the doctor's perspective, how they felt when this cybersecurity incident happened, how this impacted their daily lives. I think it quite adequately represents what is happening during a cyber attack, that the impact is not just on the IT staff during these attacks, but on the regular employees as well. What are the differences, challenges, frustrations, and so on? So I suggest to check this documentary show, because I think this is properly reflects what a non-IT person can see during a cyber attack. So at least when it comes to OT, we might have some feelings what the consequences can be.
Mm-hmm. Also, so you are saying that even the IT management or on management level, C-level, people are aware that here we have this threat, here we have to do something with it. Not just the IT, but the OT networks has to be on one hand protected, but maybe on the other hand also monitored to enable detection and response capabilities. Okay, that's good news at least. I see also progress on that. Regarding cloud, for instance, what do you see? Do you see that there is a rapid change from customer perspectives to protect their cloud environments?
I think for the cloud environments, still the biggest challenge is to understand the attack surface itself. The mm-hmm. cloud environments are so complex. They are so hard to be properly configured that it can easily lead to a cybersecurity incident. I think a good example for that is what happened to Microsoft, who is cloud service provider company. I think we can easily say that they have the proper expertise how to configure a cloud platform, but even they can make mistakes just due to the complexity of these environments. Mm-hmm. This breach happened to them late last year. There was basically a compromise in one legacy non-production test tenant account. Mm-hmm. And the attacker used the account's permission to gain access to corporate email accounts, including even cybersecurity employees, legal teams, and even senior leadership team members. So even if you have a quite technically equipped organization like Microsoft with all the expertise on how to configure their own systems, they can make easily mistakes just to the fact that these systems are so complex. So mm-hmm. that is one of the biggest challenges with the cloud environments, that most people, including even C-level executives, don't really know the whole attack surface that they have once they start consuming cloud services.
Yes, you are totally right. I think there is this false assumption that when I'm in a cloud environment and the provider is a well prepared one, then it is a secure environment, which is true, but only with the consideration that every setup, every fine tuning is made with the proper knowledge and with the highest level of consciousness to be aware of your own network and to be aware of the consequences if you press the share button or just do not share the not share button, to say the least about that. You had one point which we mentioned shortly, the AI, but before jumping into that, I have an actual headline for that. So let's talk about the headline of the week.
Headline of the week.
OpenAI revealed that a number of nation-backed threat actors try to use their resources in attack campaigns, most likely against international targets. OpenAI blocked several users and claimed that they do anything possible to prevent such malicious usage. So there is this article on, and actually it's a blog post from OpenAI, which is for us very interesting because they declare that there were identified attempts of misuse of their technology from threat actors. From the other angle, sometimes it is almost impossible to prove that an attack was done by the usage of a GPT or any other type of AI tool. But in this case, OpenAI themselves identified these kind of usages. My first feeling was that it was a brave move from OpenAI that they revealed it. They were honest with that. And we did a game also that we asked ChatGPT with the help of Copilot to summarize what kind of misuses are there for set actors of this technology. And this was also honest. And I think we should say a good word about that. That their list of potential misuses was pretty correct. What is your feeling about OpenAI's blog post, Gábor?
I think it's heading towards a good direction. That finally we openly start speaking about the challenges and difficulties of these technologies and what their impact can be, for example, on cyber defense. I think we already had discussions since the beginning. These LLM models started to be used by legitimate users, that they can be a tool for the attackers as well. On one hand, we can use these tools to create very fancy marketing materials and things like that. On the other hand, of course, the attackers can use them to compose perfect phishing emails, scam emails, and so on and so on. So I think it's not a question that this is a tool for the attackers as well. Also, there are certain projects that are focusing on to show the weaknesses of the LLM models or the environment themselves. I'm not sure if you are familiar with the OWASP top 10 list for LLMs, because finally we even have an OWASP top 10 list for LLM systems. Or, for example, if you are aware of the MITRE ATLAS framework, the adversarial threat landscape for artificial intelligence systems, which collects the same tactics and technique structure how attacks can be seen for LLM models.
Yes, I think we cannot emphasize enough the importance of the security of these GPT algorithms or LLM algorithms used from open sources or whatever sources, because people tend to feed these models with their most secure or most sensitive data, because they need the outcome, the work of the machine in their daily work, and with which they are working is actually sensitive data, so they have to be very careful about that. But this is just one aspect regarding LLM, and it's very nice that you brought up OWASP, OWASP, if someone wouldn't know it, or the MITRE ATLAS framework. I love it. I think for me, the MITRE, even the MITRE's organization and the MITRE attack matrix and also ATLAS is the biggest help when I try to find my orientation in the field of a new threat landscape or a new threat area. So it's a very good one. You personally have some connection to cloud security, as far as I know, because you have two professional identities. And on one hand, you work in this security operations consulting area. On the other hand, you are also a startup founder. The company is called Subscuto. And I would be very curious, why did you start with this company and what kind of questions do you answer at Subscuto?
Yes, as you mentioned, one of the major focus areas for me is the cybersecurity operations center development. And on the other hand, with this startup named Subscuto, I also started to focus on some niche areas which can help as external service provider for even the bigger cybersecurity operations centers. I think most of the security professionals who are working in or around the security operations centers knows the MITRE 11 strategies of a world-class SOC book. I think this is usually referred to as the book for the SOC professionals. And even MITRE says that the biggest security operation centers should get certain capabilities from an external service provider, because there are quite niche areas where you cannot really develop your in-house capabilities. And Subscuto is focusing on to provide services in these, I would say, niche domains, such as malware reverse engineering, which is vital for proper malware incident response, or how to gain visibility and how to conduct proper cybersecurity incident management in the era of DevOps or in the cloud environments. So I think that's how the picture becomes complete, basically. You need to have rock solid technology, process, and skill capabilities within a SOC, but definitely there are certain areas which requires even further specialization. That's what we try to cover from Subscuto side. And that's why we work together with SOCWISE, who is providing the cutting edge incident management capability as a service for its customers. And we are helping in these niche areas from Subscuto side to SOCWISE.
Gabor, thank you very much for your views. I thought of asking you about some personal memories of yours. Can you recall what was the first time you met a computer, and when did you write your first line of command or even code?
Well, I think I was 8 or 9 years old when I first saw a computer. It was a Commodore 64 device. And I thought that was the time when I was writing my first code. But basically, later I just figured out I was just starting my favorite game, which was called Boulder Dash or something like that.
Great. Yeah, I have similar memories, actually. But it was Spectrum, ZX. And I was so much interested that I've got a book from a library, which maybe younger listeners don't know what a library is. It's not something on a computer, but it's a building where you get books. And I had it was a thick book about the basic language. So I did some programming, around the age of 10. I asked this because I had the feeling that we have these common roots, which starts really early. It's not just about some expertise domain, but it's part of our personality. And when you try to understand the integrity or the interactions of such systems, at one day you will be also interested in their vulnerabilities. When you detect that there are naughty people who even use these vulnerabilities for their own good, then it makes you, I think, feeling like a cop or at least a detective, and that's also a good feeling for me as well.
Yeah, that's why I like cybersecurity incident management, but because each and every day is basically fighting a battle against someone that you even don't recognize. So, like I said in the beginning, after my first 5 years within IT security, I thought this is so stressful, I don't want to do that again. But after a while, I started to miss it because for me, the rest was quite boring. So I think personally, this is the most interesting part of cyber defense. I know that most of the kids would like to become hackers and penetration testers and something like that. But I would say to them or message to them that let's join us in our security operations centers, because defending something and dealing with the attacker sitting on the other side can be really interesting and joyful as well.
Definitely. And also, we are just getting back to our original topic, actually NATO cyber defense, which is, yes, they also try to somehow control and protect their network against the bad guys, to say so simple. And also, they are top tier in terms of knowledge, in terms of how well organized they are. So it was a very nice experience for both of us, and maybe this likeliness or this similarliness in our mindset made it possible that this conversation was so fruitful, and still the cooperation with NATO is so positive, and we understand
sometimes without words, what do the other party think about such topics. Thank you very much, Gabor, being with us today. This is a deep topic. Maybe we should drill down into some subtopics of FusionSox in the near future. How did you feel?
This was a really good conversation. Thanks. Thank you very much for having me on the show. For me, even this show was a good experience. And, you know, it's even if we are just focusing on the topic of FusionSox, that's quite complex. So I think it would really worth digging into the details in certain topics in the future as well.
Thank you, Gabor, one more time. And dear listeners, I'm grateful for you listening. And I'm looking forward to any comments or suggestions. Just ping me on LinkedIn or through the SOCWISE webpage. You will find my contact details. And thank you, all the listeners, for joining us. So stay secure. And remember, protection is the best, but detection is a must. See you.
This was CyberPod EU, the European cybersecurity podcast powered by SOCWISE.